And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you to Annixted Acres, the home of the Icelandic air of where Luke was from last week.
Yeah.
Luke, did you see Annixted Acres when you were over there in Iceland?
You know, I didn't. I saw a lot of lava fields, and I didn't see a lot of Annixted Acres. I saw a few waterfalls, but not a lot of Annixted Acres. That said, interesting to hear that the true freshman walk-on quarterback will be starting at quarterback one for the Golden Gophers. I don't think this surprises either you or I, and it only doesn't surprise me because if I listen to your podcast every week because I have to host it with you, and and you actually kind of hinted that this would probably be coming and that he's not your, you know what, traditional walk-on true freshman. So this isn't maybe an interesting development for those who listen to this podcast regularly, but I will say I am very fascinated to see some of the national exposure this is getting. This is going to be, what, the second walk-on true freshman to start for a Power 5 team?
You are getting way ahead of it. I have so many questions for you before we get into Zach Annixted.
Okay.
Number one, do you know how many people tweeted me from two episodes ago? Because, spoiler alert, we recorded the special teams one before Luke left for Iceland.
Right.
Since Luke has gotten back, I don't think I've told you this. I got like four tweets from people saying, hey, like Iceland is like one of the most top, you know, is one of the top destinations for tourists in the country.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, no, it's not. So I turned to my better half. I go, do you know, people go to Iceland. She looks at me like, you're a freaking idiot. And says, yeah, I have like four coworkers that have been there. Unbeknownst to me, like Iceland is the place to be.
Yeah.
So, Iceland, Luke, what can you tell me? All I know is there's like geothermal bath stuff.
Yep, they're there.
Or what the heck did you do there for a week?
Yeah.
What is there to do?
You basically like hop in a car, drive around, see a bunch of really pretty things, find a geothermal pool, hop in it.
What side of the road do you drive on? Because I know from being in Europe,
right,
that was
the right side.
The correct, the U.S. side or the Europe side?
Yeah, the U.S. side.
Yeah. You're gosh darn right, America.
And okay. I mean, it's a country of 340,000 people. They had somewhere north of like 2 million tourists a year. So, I mean, it's, you go into their capital city, which is, you know, in the surrounding areas, maybe 200,000 people. It seems like a small, like, you know, like smaller than like a Mankato or St. Cloud. But you know, it's, I don't know. It's cool. I'd highly recommend it. But yeah, it's great. It's a great one reason a lot of people have been there is just because it's a spot where you basically can go to Iceland and then you'll jump to the next flight to somewhere in Europe, right? So I know a lot of people that have done that. It's a great connecting location. Iceland Air has also been a huge reason why. Here's one fact, and then we can get to Gopher football, I promise.
Hey,
this is one fact that I learned.
People understand by now that we'll get to the football, but I need to hear about the trip.
Okay, but seriously, did you know that there are no amphibians and no reptiles on Iceland? None. They don't exist. That blew my mind. Also, no bats. None.
I have a lot. So
basically all animals that have been there, that are there, were brought by humans.
Huh.
It's kind of,
I
like,
learned something today.
Yeah, it's kind of like Hawaii in that sense. So fascinating stuff.
Wow. Well, yeah. There it is. So if anybody wants to go to Iceland, we are currently not sponsored by them, but if anybody from Icelandic Air or the country of Iceland would like to sponsor this podcast, you can hit up Luke on the Twitter machine.
Also, wanted to point out one last thing. They have the most writers, published writers per capita in the world. So basically,
how do you know that? So if I were going to fact check that, how in the world am I going to fact check that?
Well, basically what I do is I, like, when I'm in a country, I start reading like Wikipedia and all stuff about them. And
what is this, my college term papers when, yeah, I fake sources and I just end up using Wikipedia? Spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was great. I highly suggest it. Very interesting country. But let's talk about Gopher football.
Zach Annixted.
Annixted. Let's talk. Okay, so seriously.
I was not expecting that on Monday.
You weren't?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I knew I mean, I knew more than I could let on. Like, since Tuesday's, like, since August 14th, they had their scrimmage. You know, I'd heard that Anixted looked better. You know, at the two subsequent practices, Anixted was getting more reps. And then over the weekend, it, you know, from talking with quote-unquote sources, I kind of knew it was coming. But I didn't expect Fleck to make it public because I didn't think that he was going to make it public prior to New Mexico State's first game.
Yeah.
Where he could have, like, the next time Fleck meets with the media is Sunday, and that's the final time until New Mexico State. So I was like, well, New Mexico State has a game on Saturday. I mean, don't give them anything to chew on. But then first question, we're all standing there. Hey, should you sign on a quarterback? And then Fleck obviously does what Fleck does, and he goes off on a 2.5-minute tangent. If you want to see the video of what PJ had to say about why he named Zach Anixed the quarterback, it's on GI for free. Check out any of our pieces there. I mean, all the Anixed coverage has been free so far. So,
okay, but
see, I think – go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess it doesn't – maybe I'll explain why I don't think it surprised me. Number one, he came in the spring, beat out the number one rated JUCO guy for the second spot, having been here, you know, however many months. One of the things that Fleck basically harped on was that, you know, whoever wins the team is going to win the, you know, the starting quarterback position. I don't know how much I really buy that, as much as that is just like coach speak, right? But I will say this, the dude recruited two of arguably the highest rated guys to come with him from IMG Academy, right? So like
two of the top 11 recruits according to 24/7 ever to sign with Minnesota. And
yeah.
Luke, if we would have bet back in December, hey, who starts first between these three, Zach Anixed, Daniel Faalele, and Curtis Dunlap? Boy, oh boy, I would have given you some pretty big odds that Zach Anixed would have been the guy compared to the other two. You would be rolling in the theoretical dough, my friend.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, like, I mean, he's not saying he's got an it factor per se, but, you know, it's obvious he can win some guys over, right? And we're well aware of the story. You probably should rehash it, but, you know,
I'm going to have to rehash it.
Yeah, rehash the story of his experience at IMG Academy, but, like, this guy has just overcome odds after odds just to, you know, be where he is now. So in some ways, the underdog winning the starting position in some ways maybe shouldn't be a surprise, because the storyline was kind of writing itself, you know, until now. Now he's got to prove that he can play, but, you know, everybody was a freshman. Like, it wasn't like there was this great experienced guy. The great experienced guy, he already beat out and scared away.
You mean him and Tanner Morgan?
Yeah, well, I mean, Vic Veramontes got scared away.
Yeah, So let's get this out of the way now, because I think the over-under at number of times TV announcers say a true freshman walk-on this year should be set at about 68.5.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to take the over because hashtag 69 nice. But it is going to be the most overplayed story of Minnesota this year, which is unfortunate, because I think Rodney Smith and what he is set to do this year as a senior and break Darryl Thompson's numerous records should be more of a focal point. You know, Thomas Barber and Blake Cashman, Antoine Winfield. But it is going to be talked about a ton by TV announcers over the next 12 games. And so the first thing I'll note about this whole Zach Anixed starting situation is I think two weeks ago I was still expecting a starting rotation type of thing. And I was a little bit surprised to hear PJ say on Monday, this is not a rotation. This is not a guy in a short leash. We want to see what we have. Now, that's not verbatim. The first part is, I forget what he said in the last part there, but the point is Tanner Morgan isn't going to see time unless Minnesota has a big lead. I mean, this is going to be, we're going to see what we have in Zach Anixed. Now, the Zach Anixed story, for those of you who haven't been on Gopher Illustrated to,
or listen to this podcast,
or, you know, just go to GI quick read, meet Minnesota starting quarterback for 2018, Zach Anixed. I basically go through the entire story. So Zach Anixed starts out Mankato West, you know, well, how crazy is it, by the way, Mankato West quarterbacks, Phil Nelson, and now Zach Anixed.
Yeah,
that not is every day you have that random high school produce two Big Ten starting quarterbacks in a decade. is what it is. So he starts out at Mankato West, freshman and sophomore year. He and his brother Brock, who is a wide receiver on the team, decide that they want to go to IMG Academy in Florida. Great. They go to IMG. They want to be challenged. They want to essentially start their college football life, because that IMG Academy down in Florida is essentially what it's like. It prepares you for college football. I mean, yes, you still have rigorous academics, but you're living and breathing football. And so Zach Anik said his junior season in 2016, he doesn't play. He sits behind a Texas A&M quarterback by the name of Kellen Mond, someone that started as a true freshman last year for the Aggies. So heading into his senior season at IMG Academy, he's still not starting. He's the backup to a higher-rated quarterback named Artur Satowski. And by the end of September, Anikstead's play in practice, plus a higher-rated kid committed to Miami, struggling ahead of him, Anikstead took the reins. And I know that Steve Wiltfong from 24/7 Sports had a fantastic piece. He talked with the IMG Academy coach today more in-depth about Zach Anikstead and what Minnesota's getting. Another free article, just check my Twitter or head on over to GI. It's on the front page. Essentially, he says that, yeah, Satowski was struggling. Anikstead looked really good in practice. We felt like he gave us a bit of an advantage. And from then on, he never relinquished the job. I mean, Zach Anikstead's play forced Miami to drop him, the Satowski quarterback. And by the way, I wouldn't feel too bad for him, as he's likely going to be the starting quarterback at Rutgers this year, as Jerry Kill went out and got him. So it's kind of funny, to the point where Rutgers signs a backup quarterback at IMG Academy, where Minnesota signed the actual starter. So, and in that same breath, I mean, he's not your typical walk-on to where, like, he didn't have any offers or he wasn't highly rated. I mean, our 24/7 team rated him as an 86, mid to high level 3-star. I mean, that's better than what Phil Nelson, Mitch Leidner, Max Shortel, and I forget the final quarterback. What was the other random quarterback to start? Phil Nelson, Mitch Leidner, and Chris Streveler, and Max Shortel. He's a more higher rating than them. And again, you look at the scholarship offers. He had Illinois, Pitt, Cincinnati, Western Kentucky, and I think a couple more. I mean, it's not great, but you look at those four quarterbacks I mentioned, Phil Nelson, Max Shortel, Mitch Leidner, Chris Streveler. That's more Power 5 offers and BCS offers than they had combined. So again, the next question is, Luke, that you're going to ask me is, number one, why was he on scholarship?
Sure.
Because this is the question I've gotten repeatedly of late. So it was a numbers game. Again, if you want to go back and listen to our talks about it in December, I mean, Zach Anikstead even scared off, you know, Minnesota's quarterback commit at the time, because Minnesota took him as a preferred walk-on commit, I think, in October. And the quarterback commit at the time, his name escapes me. He's at Virginia. Brennan Armstrong, who I think he's going to be the number two quarterback for Virginia this fall. You know, he wasn't too keen on that. And so he ends up decommitting. Minnesota ends up going to get Vic Viramontes. The point back in December, when the Minnesota's thought process was, we need to get a guy that is ready to go. Now, and they're like, we also really like Anikstead, and we think if we can, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a kid with multiple Power 5 offers walk on at Minnesota before. But PJ was able to do it somehow. And then come the spring, Minnesota goes all through spring ball. Zach Anikstead is the number three guy. Come the spring game, the lights come on, and Zach Anikstead looks like the true freshman. Or excuse me, he does not look like the true freshman. Vic Viramontes looks like the true freshman. And Zach Anikstead looks like the junior college quarterback. Yeah, you know, Vic has three fumbles. Anikstead goes, I think, 11 for 20 with a touchdown, no turnovers. Vic Viramontes sees the writing on the wall. He's going to be passed. He leaves. So now here we are to fall camp. And come fall camp, Anikstead just – and I guess I should say this. All the reports I got over the summer were Zach Anikstead is working his tail off in the film room because he knows if he's going to have any kind of advantage on Tanner. Because what advantage over the summer did Tanner possess, Luke, over Zach?
He just had experience.
He had more experience at Kirk Shiraka's offense. He had more experience, you know, just kind of being around what Minnesota's offense he wanted to be. So he spent a lot of time in the film room. He and Tanner Morgan both. And then come fall camp, Tanner Morgan still the starter. And then as each successive practice kind of went on, you saw Zach Anikstead get more and more comfortable throwing. And it's just, I mean, I've talked about it extensively in my practice reports on GI, so this shouldn't be a surprise to any of our members, but Anixed just can make throws that Tanner can't. Anixed will take chances that Tanner won't. And that's going to, again, it's kind of that whole Brett Favre syndrome where, you know, Brett can make some throws where it's like, boy, oh boy, what a throw. And he's also going to make some throws like, why in the world did you throw that? But, I mean, that's nothing that Gopher fans aren't used to. I mean, they saw the anemic and awful passing game that Minnesota had essentially the entire Big Ten schedule. So, Zach Anixed, and here's the other thing we need to talk about. Yes, Zach Anixed is the second true freshman walk-on to start at a Power 5 institution. The other one was the number one overall pick in the spring draft, Baker Mayfield, a.k.a. the next coming of Drew Brees. Don't compare the two, please. I know that the national, you know, college football writers have made the joke on Twitter. I'm not expecting Zach Anixed to be the number one freaking pick in 4 years. I am expecting Zach Anixed to provide, you know, if his play in practice continues to roll over to when the lights come on August 30th and then September 8th and then September 15th, if that play continues, I think Minnesota's passing game, number one, is going to be clearly more, it's just going to be better than where it was last year. But again, Zach Anixed is a walk-on right now. But it's also two things. Number one, no coincidence, his brother just got put on scholarship, I believe last week, a.k.a. hint, folks. Maybe Minnesota knew that they wanted to make sure the Anixed family knew, hey, we're going to take care of your kids, a.k.a. both Brock and Zach. Now, I believe Brock is just going to be on scholarship for this fall semester because Minnesota's going to need that scholarship come January/December. But Zach will be on scholarship in January. That is what I've been told for months, many, many months from my sources within the Gopher program. So, again, yeah, he's a walk-on for now, but in January he's going to be on scholarship. So, again, it shouldn't make you think any less of him. But once again, this is the story of Zach Anixed. He is now your true freshman starter. But in that same breath, again, this is no slight against Tanner Morgan. Tanner didn't do anything wrong during fall camp. I mean, he didn't have like a couple practices where it's like, how in the world is this kid a Big Ten quarterback? It's more of Zach just made more plays. And that's one of the things PJ Fleck talked about was Zach has made more splash plays. Both of them have taken care of the ball well. But like I was talking about in terms of me, Ryan Burns, like he can make throws that make you go, wow. I mean, that's, you know, whether it's, you know, deep down the field, whether it's on a post corner route, again, he can put the ball in places to where Minnesota's receivers have a chance to go make a play on the ball. And essentially it's only those guys being able to go up and make a play on the ball. So yes, Zach Anixed is your starting quarterback. It appears that this is not a rotation. This is not a short leash for somebody. And in the words of PJ Fleck, let's give this guy a lot of opportunities. So while I expect to see Tanner Morgan at some point in the non-conference again, you're hoping that Minnesota can build a big lead against New Mexico State and Miami of Ohio, and that can give you some of the fourth quarter to Tanner Morgan so he can get snaps. Because like we've talked about on this podcast, Luke, I believe every year in this decade, except for one, so 7 of 8 years, Minnesota has had to play two quarterbacks because of either poor play or injuries. So Tanner Morgan has to be ready. But as of now, I know you are buying a lot of acreage on Anixed acres.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I don't know. I mean, I hear what Fleck said, but I gotta imagine, like, they just don't have guys that have experience. I gotta imagine they find a way to get Tanner Morgan at least a series or two, right?
Just, again, that's where you're hoping in the non-conference, whether it is right. New Mexico State, which as of today, Minnesota is a 17.5-point favorite. So, I mean, if you are winning by 17 or 21 points in the fourth quarter, what the heck are you throwing Anixed out there for? I mean, by that point, if Minnesota's at that point where they're up 17 or 21 in the fourth quarter against New Mexico State, well, then Anixed's probably done a pretty good job to lead the offense down the field to multiple scores.
Right.
And so let's see a couple series of Tanner Morgan. Let him get his feet wet because he's going to have to be ready. So, again, it's going to be a lot of Zach Anixed going forward here, barring injury or some kind of, poor play, which I haven't seen from Zach since he's been here. I mean, the dude is just, as you mentioned it, I think that's what something that people can get behind is it is an underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't start at IMG as a junior, doesn't really play, doesn't start as a senior, passes the starter, finishes out the year, gets to Minnesota. He's the number three quarterback in January, builds his way up. Here we are. He's the number two quarterback come fall camp, builds his way up. And now he's the starter. And again, PJ talks about it. He told Tanner and Zach in his office, like, hey, we're going to go with Zach. You're the starting quarterback. And he's like, I'm expecting him to be jumping up and down, smiling. He goes, okay. Like again, this kid, just the kid doesn't show a whole lot of emotion. And right. Again, that's what I kind of want my quarterback. Be even keel, whether you make a great throw down the field or you make a blundering interception. So that's your introduction to Zach Anikstead.
All right. So I hesitate to even bring up like depth chart and two deeps because you and I both know.
We loathe the freaking depth charts.
Well, it's like 60% accurate and 40% just hot garbage.
Hogwash. Yeah. It's again, if you've been listening to this podcast, if you're a member of Gopher Illustrated, I mean, it's funny you say 60%, by the way, because that's literally what I wrote down today
for
my projected depth chart, which is going to be live here Wednesday morning. Is I literally wrote like, hey, I'm doing this because 60% of it is accurate and the other 40% is hot garbage.
Yeah.
So while Minnesota doesn't want to put anything out there, I mean, I guess they have to put out a depth chart. But as anybody listening to this knows, I mean, yeah, they can put out who's starting, but that doesn't mean they're playing.
By the way, can we go back to like Big Ten Media Day when PJ was asked about depth charts as it pertains to sports betting?
It's bad. I mean, I'd love an injury. I guess not even an injury report, like a who's playing report.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of being like 90 minutes before kickoff. I'm down on the field. And Ken Handy Holly's not suited up. He wasn't injured. What's the deal there?
Yeah.
And again, all these freaking college football coaches want the advantage. They don't want any of this info leaking out. Like it's Russian nuclear secrets. So that's why I went through from my six practices I've seen and when it made my projected depth chart, because Lord knows that Minnesota ain't going to provide an accurate one.
All right.
Let's get into it.
So give me your two deeps across the offensive line.
Offensive line. I mean, this should be no surprise. I mean, this has been the starting five. Basically, well, it has been the entire camp. So you have Donnell Green at left tackle, senior Connor Rolson at left guard, finally being able to hopefully settle in on one position after starting six games at left guard last year and six games at center. Jared Weiler, while he's healthy still, is going to be your starting center. Redshirt freshman Blaze Andrews at right guard. He has held that spot firm throughout the entire fall camp, and then Sam Schluter, Meyer Lutheran zone at right tackle. Behind them, I guess it's not even worth getting into who's behind them. I'll tell you who's going to play as far as what I've been told. So your swing tackle is Daniel Fa'alele, the true freshman, the Australian. I'm trying to think of an alliteration for Daniel Fa'alele. We're just going to call him the Australian monster. So here's what would happen if Donnell Green goes down, Minnesota's left tackle. Sam Schluter slides to left tackle, Daniel Fa'alele is inserted at right. Okay. So if Sam Schluter goes down, Daniel Fa'alele just comes in. So again, Daniel Fa'alele is going to be playing right tackle if he is used this year. Now, I would love to see Daniel Fa'alele redshirt, but I don't think that's likely going to happen. So Daniel Fa'alele, true freshman, IMG Academy, likely your swing tackle. Your swing guard, I think, is going to be Curtis Dunlap Jr., true freshman, IMG Academy, the highest rated offensive lineman to sign with Minnesota in the internet era. Someone that, again, if Blaze Andrews goes down, okay, well, that's a natural transition for Curtis Dunlap. He's already practicing it with the twos at right guard. He's inserted there. Now, if Connor Olson goes down, I'm not entirely sure whether they're going to try to slide Blaze over and then put Curtis in it right. But, again, I think Curtis Dunlap's your swing guard. And then at center, it's going to be redshirt freshman John Michael Schmitz, someone that I know different people that have been to practice have been impressed with him in terms of our members on Gopher Illustrated. And, again, I think he's been solid for a redshirt freshman. So when you look at kind of who is your center of the future, you know, if Minnesota doesn't want to slide Connor Rolson there, it's going to be John Michael Schmitz.
All right. So I think the thing to keep in mind is we have this new redshirt rule. right? So you're hoping for health regardless. You do every year, but you always need some depth. It'll be curious to see how they manage, you know, somebody like a Curtis Dunlap, like a Daniel Faalele, to see if, you know, if they're staying relatively healthy, can they afford to not redshirt them?
Well, the other interesting thing is, I just mentioned eight names on the offensive line. Six of them are underclassmen and four of them are freshmen.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you're going to lose Donnell Green and Jared Weiler next year, but you're still bringing back, you know, six of your eight core guys. And so, and even more so, I mean, in 2 years, six of those eight core guys are still going to be there. So while this offensive line is pretty young, again, inexperienced to an extent, I still think, while it may not look good early on, I think this offensive line is going to be better than what they were last year.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's go receiving group next.
So starters, I have Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, and Demetrius Douglas. So you have Tyler Johnson and Bateman on the outside. Rashad Bateman has been everything I was hoping was going to be. He was everything I thought, you know, I'd been told he was going to be. And it's nice that, you know, the things you kind of hear behind the scenes actually match up to what you see in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Johnson and Bateman outside and Demetrius Douglas in the slot. And the other three receivers to really know are going to be Seth Green, who is, the whole Seth Green, is he a receiver, whole tight end debate.
Doesn't
if you're
really
listening
matter.
To this, it literally does not matter what in the freaking world you want to call him. Like, some people on my board refuse to call him a receiver because he's 6'5", 250 pounds. Who cares? I mean, he literally just works with the receiving group now. Like, yeah. He's just a pass catcher, whatever you want to call him. So Seth Green could be used as, you know, flexed out. He could be used inside. I think Minnesota is going to be using him as kind of a situational guy, especially for the first half of the season as Seth kind of gets more comfortable. You're going to see him a lot, I think, on third down. And you're going to see him a lot in the red zone or even from the 30-yard line in. Seth Green is a problem in terms of a problem for opposing defenses. The way he is able to win contested catches with his 6'5" frame is, again, I'll get into it here in a second, but something I haven't seen in quite some time from the Minnesota receiving core. Backing up the outside guys is going to be Chris Ottman-Bell, freshman, redshirt freshman, so he'll be the backup to Bateman and Johnson. And then if Demetrius Douglas goes down, you're going to see Phillip Howard. And, you know, I talked about this earlier this week on Gopher Illustrated. I think this is the most improved unit on the offense because I wasn't expecting to see what I've seen so far in fall camp, and that's multiple Minnesota receivers, heaven forbid one, win contested catches. I mean, Tyler Johnson has done a much better job than what he showed last fall, and I hope that's able to continue in terms of a transition onto the field this fall. But Rashad Bateman, you know, I was thinking more of, especially early on in his career in terms of as a freshman, you know, he's probably just going to be your speed guy. You know, you're kind of crossing route guy, get him ahead of steam and let him do some things in the open field. I mean, Rashad Bateman has caught maybe more contested catches between the hashes or between the numbers than any other receiver I've seen so far in fall camp. I mean, it's just something I wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have Seth Green and Chris Ottman-Bell who can win at the catch point. So, again, it's exciting for me to say that just because I'm so sick and tired of, and I'm sure all of our listeners are as well, is watching Minnesota quarterbacks throw, you know, if and when in recent years they've thrown good balls out to their receivers where it's a 50-50 ball. Well, I mean, I don't have to tell you, Derek Burns doesn't have to tell you, you know, Luke doesn't have to tell you, Minnesota hasn't been winning those. So I'm hoping that the practice, what I'm seeing in practice, translate over onto the field. So again, I think between, you know, those six guys, Minnesota's going to be much improved in the passing game. And that's why I think I'm more optimistic about Zach Anixted succeeding compared to if he would have played last year, just because last year Minnesota only had Tyler Johnson for a pass catcher. Well, now you got Rashad Bateman. Now you have Demetrius Douglas healthy. Now you have Seth Green as he's continuing to get better with his transition from quarterback to pass catcher. You have Chris Ottman-Bell. And then if Phillip Howard is your sixth receiver, I think you're doing okay.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, this group really needed to improve so that the whole offense could improve, because without a formidable receiving core, you know, the running game struggles because they just dare you to throw, right? so it will be interesting to see. We have to see the results. I mean, on paper, it looks better. You know, what you've seen in practice, it looks better. We got to see it in the games. But I am bullish that this offense can be improved. I'm not saying drastically improved, but at least improved as what it was last year.
And that's going to benefit the running game.
Right, exactly.
I mean, if Minnesota actually has a legitimate passing game, like if Minnesota can, you know, if Minnesota's seen 7-8 guys in the box early in the non-conference, I'm excited because that's going to be an opportunity for Rashad Bateman, Tyler Johnson, Seth Green, Chris Ottman-Bell, Demetrius Douglas. You're going to have one-on-one matchups across the board. Mm-hmm. And again, I've seen Zach Anixon make the timing throws or the anticipation throws that, again, all it takes is, well, this guy's got to shake one tackle and he's to the house.
Yeah.
And that's going to open up things immensely in theory for Rodney Smith in the running game. Now, again, if the passing game improves, which I freaking hope it would, and considering the level of competition in the month of September, again, that's where Rodney Smith, as he has these aspirations of obviously playing on Sundays, but chasing down some of Darrell Thompson's records. I mean, if he's only running against 6-7-man boxes instead of 8-man boxes consistently, I mean, he's going to be a happy camper.
Right. Okay, let's talk a little bit of tight end before we move back to running back.
Yeah, tight end wise, it's going to be interesting because Cole Keith is a little banged up.
Okay.
And again, you know, it's something to where he's been practicing. He hasn't had one of the orange jerseys on, which, by the way, this is the healthiest. If you couldn't hear me knocking on wood there, that Minnesota's been through this far in fall practice in a hot minute. You know, Minnesota has a couple of guys out, but those were guys that were already out. They're recovering from ACL tears. So, Jake, you know, Koki's battling a little bit of a nagging injury. And so you've seen in the last week, Jake Paulson, a freshman tight end, redshirt freshman tight end from Kentucky, get a lot more reps. And I know that Minnesota is high on Jake. And again, we'll see what the rotation is, but I think you're going to see Co-Keefe and Colton Beebe on running downs, and I think you're going to see more of Bryce Witham and Jake Paulson on passing downs.
Mm-hmm.
I am a little disappointed that Brevin Spanford, Minnesota's kind of committed to making him a tight end, which is kind of head-scratching to me. But again, that's not why I make the millions of dollars that PJ Fleck does or the six figures that everybody else in the Gopher coaching staff makes.
Right.
But, you know, I'd like to see Brevin Spanford essentially be the Seth Green protege in terms of that's kind of the role I want him to fill. But again, Minnesota is pretty dedicated to try and make him a tight end, which is kind of head scratching, but here nor there. So again, I think you're going to see Co-Keefe, Colton Beebe running downs, and Jake Paulson, Bryce Witham on passing.
All right, let's talk running back. We obviously know Rodney Smith will be leading the charge there, but you know, what do we have behind him?
Much to the chagrin of some people, especially some people within, or I guess, people close that know the thinking of Minnesota coaching staff members. Apparently, I give Mohamed Ibrahim a bad rep, which I'm not entirely sure. Okay, Luke, you're the unbiased one. I guess I hope in theory I'm unbiased, but like, have I been too hard on Mo Ibrahim? I just don't. I guess here's my spiel: is I just think he's a guy. Like I don't see him as a 20 touch a game guy. He's a 5'8", I guess north south running back. Again, he's the guy that is likely going to be the number two to start the year. He doesn't have top end speed. He can make the man miss in the hole, but he can keep a pile moving, I guess. But like, he's not a guy that you want to feature the offense around like a Rodney Smith is, like a David Cobb was, like a Shannon Brooks was. And like, I think Bryce Williams could potentially be, or Nolan Edmonds. I just think that while you're trying to figure it out, like I would assume that here's how the running back rotation would go. Rodney Smith is going to get as many touches as he can handle before he starts to break down. Let's get that off the way right away.
Sure.
But I think in September, Mohamed Ibrahim is the number two. And then I think in October, Bryce Williams, as he continues to get more comfortable in the Gopher offense, becomes that guy. And then the question comes, Shannon Brooks looks like he's going to be healthy come November. Shannon Brooks has been doing individual drills without a knee brace for the last 10 days.
Hmm.
And so say you want to keep the redshirt on Bryce Williams. Well, how about Mohamed Ibrahim gets September? Bryce Williams gets more run as the number two in October. And then if you're just unsure of what you want to do with Bryce Williams, well, come November, yeah, I would roll out Shannon Brooks for Illinois, Purdue, Northwestern, maybe not Wisconsin, keep him for the bowl game. Spoiler alert, I'm predicting a bowl game. We'll get to that in a bit. But, like, I don't know. I just see more upside with guys like Bryce Williams and Nolan Edmonds and Mohamed Ibrahim. But, again, I think Mo Ibrahim is going to be the guy to start out spelling Roddy Smith.
So to answer your question, like, have you been fair to Ibrahim? I think the hard thing – I think what's hard to gauge with him is, like, we've gotten to see one spring game. He played pretty well, right?
He's fine.
But the thing is like, he doesn't need to be the feature back, right? But number two, like, we don't get to, I haven't been to practices, but I don't know how much you get to see of, like, pass protection, right? Like, he might be great.
And that's
there.
The other, he's not though. At least in the five reps I've seen.
Sure.
Especially in the Friday TCF one, he gave up two sacks. So, again, maybe I am being unfair to Mohamed Ibrahim, and if he's got a family member listening to this or something, I literally have nothing against your child and or friend. It's just, I think he's, like, this is his ceiling. Like, is a number two, 6 to 9 touch game, but, you know, he's a guy that should be spelled.
Where
Bryce Williams or Nolan Edmonds or even Shannon Brooks. I mean, are just guys that have a higher ceiling to potentially be your feature back.
So I think what I hear you saying is, to draw maybe a baseball analogy, you know, he's maybe like, you know, his ceiling is going to be a number three starter, right? There. Whereas, you know, these other guys you see have the potential to be a number two or a number one starter, you know, on a five man rotation in baseball.
I think Mohamed Ibrahim could be the Jake Odorizzi of the Twins staff.
Gosh.
Whereas I think Bryce Williams or Nolan Edmonds
could be the Barrios.
I guess in this scenario, yeah. Again, I want to see more, but again, they just have the frame, the running style, the top end speed that, and I think the elusiveness that Mohamed doesn't. So again, let's get off that before I get some angry phone calls from some people close to the Minnesota program.
Let's hope he proves you wrong.
I hope he proves me wrong.
For all those people listening, this is also the guy that picked Hank Ekpe to be the, like, breakout player.
Literally, stop. Because that was 2014, 4 years ago. Oh, my God.
I'm just saying,
you realize Mohamed Ibrahim's going to go for like 100 yards and a touchdown for some random game in the non-conference, and my mentions are just going to be it's going to be literally the I told you so show.
Yeah,
so,
okay. I know. All right, we do need to get to defense, you know, before we're starting to run out of time. So defensively, the defensive front, what do you see in there in terms of depth chart?
So defensive line-wise, let's start with the defensive ends. Rush defensive end, you're going to see Carter Coughlin, followed by either Teyon Devers or Boye Mafe. Now, I think you'll likely see Devers before Mafe, but Carter Coughlin. And see, here's what I've learned from my mistakes, Luke. Whereas in that 2014 fall camp, Hank Ekpe was just abusing offensive tackles.
Yeah.
And I was like, Hank Ekpe is going to be the next coming of Dwight Freed. I literally don't even think I said that. I think I said he's going to have like 8 sacks, and everybody remembers it. Is I'm going to say he's the next Khalil Mack. Just
right.
How people's memories go.
It's just more fun to give you a hard time.
I know. So Carter Coughlin has been as impressive as I've seen an edge rusher in some time, and he's given these offensive tackle fits. Now, again, learn from my mistakes that Carter Coughlin, where he excels right now, is he is so quick twitch, he is so explosive, and he can bend so well that he bursts off the line. He can stay as low to the ground to where the offensive tackle tries to set and punch. Well, Carter can get around that, and he can get to the quarterback. My biggest thing with Carter that's holding me back here from kind of just saying the dude's going to be a monster is I want to see him use those moves that Marcus West is teaching him in individual time. Because I know he can turn the corner. I know he can present a speed rush. But is he able to use a spin move? Is he able to kind of jab outside, go inside? Is he able to do some different things that when the offensive tackle just plays for a speed rush on passing downs and they nullify him, he's got to be able to counter that. Carter has all the athletic ability in the world, but if he can add some pass rushing arsenal, you know, moves to his arsenal, he's going to be dangerous. And I think whereas Teyon Devers has really filled out his frame, I'm more intrigued by Boye Mafe. Probably because Boye Mafe is 2 years younger, and he has a frame that is bigger and longer than what Devers has. You know, Mafe, when he gets out there, I'm still not entirely sold. He knows what his assignment is. But when he does, I mean, he's making plays. So, again, I don't think you're going to see a ton of Boye Mafe as Carter Coughlin's going to be that guy. On the other side, I think to start the year, you're going to see Winston Dilaidie-Boudère, someone that struggled against the run in the non-con, or basically against the run. So the question becomes, when do we see Ezzie Owatumu? A bigger guy, 6'6", 260 pounds. Obviously, he's got 4 inches and 25 pounds on Winston, but Winston is the kind of the emotional leader of the defense. And so kind of that changing in the guard, when does it happen? I mean, either one of these rush spots or either one of these defensive end spots, my biggest question mark is going to be how do they hold up against the run? Because again, both positions in terms of the rush defensive end or the strong side defensive end struggled against the run last year. So, and essentially, Carter and Winston were the starting guys there last year. So how does Minnesota and Rob Smith nullify that? How do they improve against the run? I think it's going to come down to these guys. And then on the defensive tackle front, I think O.J. Smith and Gary Moore are fine. You know, I think they're Big Ten guys. And I think that they're going to be playing probably 70% of Minnesota's defensive tackle snaps. Now, I'd like it to be 60%, but the issue is I am very worried about play behind them. Because Minnesota has a junior college guy by the name of Royal Silver. You know, I would have liked to see more from him, especially knowing he's a 21, 22-year-old guy going against the youth that Minnesota has on the offensive line. Is it going to be Sam Renner, Maple Grove zone, got the spring game scholarship? You know, he's been making some plays against the run, but he's not a big-bodied guy. Again, he's not your 300-pound guy. Is it going to be Jamal Teague, a.k.a. Elijah Teague, which, by the way, Elijah Teague wants to be known as Jamal Teague. Apparently, that was not made known before he got to Minnesota. So when you are confused when I refer to Jamal Teague, it's Jamal, a.k.a. Elijah Teague. I think Jamal Teague should be the number three defensive tackle, especially knowing what Minnesota wants to do in the defensive line. Like O.J. Smith, the Alabama defensive tackle transfer, he's 330 pounds. He is going to eat double teams all day. That is his role. He's not going to have great stats, but he's going to eat center and guard double teams, and that's going to allow Gary Moore, Ezzie Owatumu, Carter Coughlin to have one-on-one matchups. And that's kind of the role that Steven Richardson unfortunately had last year because Minnesota didn't have, you know, that big, you know, Pat Williams type for you Viking fans, you know, defensive tackle out there. Like if O.J. Smith would have been available last year, like Steven Richardson would have put up some gaudy stats because he would have had one-on-ones all day. But again, that the number three and number four defensive tackle guys that are going to have to play 30% of snaps, it's a little bit dicey for me. So again, I'm going to need to see a lot more from Royal Silver, Sam Renner, Jamal Teague, or maybe even a Nate Umlor at defensive tackle.
All right. So yeah, defensive line is still a position that, you know, we have some concerns primarily on the depth side and just being able to stop the run. I think linebacker is a position where we have fewer concerns, mostly because we have some proven commodities, but I know that there has been some question marks on who's going to play those backup roles. So I'm curious to see who you got there.
I'm going to be honest. I was reading through some things. I have no idea what you said.
Oh, linebackers, dude. Linebackers.
Well, it's a good thing I can keep it short and sweet because I am not worried about linebacker at all. I mean, it's Blake Cashman is healthy. Blake Cashman, you know, I got some more clarity on that. You know, why didn't Blake Cashman play last fall, especially with the injuries that Jonathan Celestine had? Well, Blake Cashman was injured again. I believe it was his shoulder. He had off-season shoulder surgery. So both of them were battling injuries. Now Blake Cashman's healthy, and Blake Cashman's been in the backfield. I was having this conversation with, I believe, Mike Grimm, the Vox for the Golden Gopher football team on the radio side. And, you know, we were talking about how I think Blake Cashman makes more splash plays per defensive snap than anyone I can remember in at least the last couple of years. When he is out there, Blake Cashman is making plays. And he has been making plays because he's healthy in fall camp. So you have Blake Cashman, you have Thomas Barber, who's been flying around. Kamal Martin's been flying around. Julian Huff has been, looks like Minnesota has been using him as a kind of a passing down situation guy, which makes a lot of sense to me because he is where Julian Huff is going to make his hay as a senior is going to be on passing downs, and it's going to be timing the snap and getting underneath 6 foot six offensive lineman because he's 5'10 on a good day. He is so quick when he times that snap that it gives offensive linemen fits. And then the question is going to be how many of these linebackers, in terms of these true freshman linebackers, play. Mariano Sorry-Marin and Thomas Rush have been getting a ton of run with the second group because Minnesota knows what they have in Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, Blake Cashman, Julian Huff. So they want to see what they have in Rush and Sorry-Marin. I mean, Braylon Oliver even, because I think I have him as the number three backer for both outside linebacker spots. I mean, Minnesota needs bodies on special teams. Plus, where does Bailey Schoenfelder fit? He was just put on scholarship for this semester. I mean, I think especially Sorry-Marin, Oliver, Rush, Schoenfelder, they're going to be counted on to be on special teams, but I don't have any reservations. I think linebacker is the absolute strength of the Gopher defense.
All right, so defensive back. Boy, again, another position where you've got some – you've got some players where you're really high on, but the depth becomes a real big question mark again, right? So where do you see this kind of shaking out?
At corners, I have Keandre Thomas, who looks like cornerback one. I mean, he looks healthy. He's been giving receivers fits. His length and his ability to close on the ball, especially in coverage, has been pretty good. And now the other one I'm projecting a true freshman starter on the other side there in Terrell Smith. Someone that, if, for those of you who don't know who quote-unquote tea time is, that is what the coaches call him. That's his nickname. Terrell Smith from the state of Georgia, 6'1". He's got a 10.3, 100-meter time. If you want to think of him as a bigger, longer, faster Jalen Myrick, go ahead. Because he has been very physical with receivers. He's been very good in coverage. I wish I could tell you more about how he can tackle. But... the media here in six practices hasn't seen anyone tackle because Minnesota's only tackled one day and that scrimmage was close to the puck.
Did you say faster than Jalen Merrick?
Literally, Terrell Smith has a 10.3 100-meter time. I believe Jalen Merrick out of high school was 10.6.
Okay. But you said, because I heard bigger, faster, stronger, which, okay, bigger, stronger, sure, but I was like faster, that caught my ear.
So. I wouldn't say he's stronger. I mean, Terrell Smith is a 6'1", 170.
Oh, okay, maybe I heard you wrong. But still.
Again, he's bigger, he's longer, and I'd say he's faster. Again, but that's what the track times tell me. Now, again, I want to see if those track times
translate to the field.
I want to see if he, like, is he going to play as fast as Myrick played, or is he going to play like Devin Crawford Tufts?
Yeah.
When that track speed never kind of translated over. So I think you have Keandre. I think you have Terrell Smith starting at corner. And then I'm not really entirely sure what to tell you at nickel because I think you're going to see a lot of different bodies there. I think that Antoine Winfield is going to play a lot more nickel than what people have seen in fall camp because Minnesota wants him close to the line of scrimmage to blitz, to make tackles in open space, to kind of just do different things essentially as glorified linebacker. And so where does that put someone like Antonio Chenault, someone that's been playing a little bit of slot of late because Terrell Smith has been playing so well in fall camp? Where does that leave Chenault? Where does that leave Coney Durr? And then, again, I'm going to be interested to see, or where does that leave Florida transfer Chris Williamson? Unfortunately for Chris, he's been in and out of the lineup again in fall camp with injuries. So we'll see. But and then at the safety spot, again, that's where you're going to start Winfield. That's where you're going to start Jacob Huff. But then the names behind him, I mean, again, you're talking about, we've talked extensively about a true freshman walk-on on the offensive side of the ball. Well, the one on the defensive side of the ball to know is Jordan Howden, someone that Minnesota snuck in under the radar and got him enrolled in June. So the story with Jordan Howden goes, he's from Las Vegas. He had Mountain West offers, after his senior year, but his grades weren't great. He got qualified he qualified with the NCAA in late May, and Minnesota was able to sneak him in as a walk-on. And before anybody knew, He was enrolled at Minnesota, and now he's the third. He's the number three safety, and he's been very good in coverage along with Benny Sapp, who I think is the number four safety with Calvin Swenson. So it's going to be interesting to see what Minnesota does there.
All right. I can't go any further without asking about the kicking situation.
You see, the worst part is I don't have an answer, and it bugs the living crap out of me.
So obviously, I know
Emmett Carpenter is going to near kicker. And then I asked Emmett, because we got him with the media, like, hey, are you kicking off this year? And he goes, I don't know. I'm battling with Reirse, John Mack, and Brock Walker. So they're still battling, and the latest I heard this afternoon was Minnesota still doesn't know who their punter is. Minnesota still doesn't know who's kicking off. And Minnesota still doesn't know who's returning the ball. So, like, it's like I'm not even worth – it's not even worth spending valuable air on because Minnesota doesn't know.
All right.
So here we are.
Fair enough, fair enough. Okay, so let's real quickly, we should get through kind of some season predictions. These are really hard to do, right? We have been notoriously terrible at them. But
I don't know, have we been that bad?
Well, I think we've been okay once we get to the final record. We get to the final record, I don't think we've been very good at like picking what games they win and lose particularly.
I think our season records have been pretty like plus or minus a game. But I think the games that we project them to win and project them to lose haven't been just great.
Yeah, because I know one year we both projected them to beat Wisconsin. That obviously didn't happen.
Well, technically they were winning in the second. It's here.
Whatever. Again, it's not
dwelling on the past. What am I talking?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's go into this game. Let's go game by game. Real quick, you know, maybe justification. Maybe some concerns, whatever. Let's start New Mexico. I know you've mentioned they're a 17-point favorite. I'm going to take them because, I mean, Anik said Akers is going to start. It's going to be the glorious. It's going to be a great story.
You're such a homer.
I know, just such
you
a homer.
You view things through maroon and gold colored glasses. I cannot believe that you cannot be objective about it.
Unbelievable. So
unbelievable.
I have them winning that first game. What do you got?
Yeah. How about I'll set the scene for you going forward here. So for those who don't know anything about New Mexico State, they were I don't know that there was a better college coaching job in football last year than what Doug Martin did at New Mexico State. The Aggies, if for all of you that remember Aggie Vision from a few years ago, qualified and won their first bowl game in 57 years last year. They were 6-6. I mean, it was a huge deal out there in New Mexico State. So while I am a bit worried about New Mexico State because of all the young players that are going to be getting their first collegiate snaps, Minnesota has the benefit of, number one, being at home. Number two, they'll have a game tape on New Mexico State because New Mexico State starts their season on Saturday against, I believe, Idaho. Well, New Mexico State will have literally no film on the quarterback, any of the receivers, what Minnesota wants to do there. And number three, Minnesota just has better overall talent because, once again, they're 17-point favorites. So I think that this is a win for Minnesota. I have Minnesota 1-0. So the next game would be Fresno State. For those of you who don't know anything about Fresno State, you've just put on your ears. You're trying to figure out what's Minnesota going to look like this fall. Well, here's what Fresno State looked like this past fall. Minnesota's first Saturday night game, September 8th. Fresno State won 10 games last year in the Mountain West. Too many teams, like this is not a team to sleep on because too many teams slept on them last year. Second year coach Jeff Tedford guided them to a 10-win season in year one. Again, Minnesota, it's the second game of the year for them. There's still going to be a lot of youth getting reps against a very good Mountain West team, a team that beat Boise State and then lost to them in the Mountain West Championships. They beat Boise State to get to the Mountain West Championship, and then unfortunately they lost a close game to Boise State last year. So again, Fresno State has a very good defense. Now again, this is still a game that I think Minnesota should win. I don't think they should win it by double digits. I think it should be a 4-8 point win. But this is a good Fresno State team. So I have Minnesota 2-0 at home. What say you about Fresno State?
Well, I think that didn't they actually graduate a bunch of guys too?
They did, but I am not sleeping on this Fresno State team.
Yeah, I'm not trying to sleep on them either, but I'm trying to convince myself.
They did graduate some guys, but again, this is a team that wasn't very good before Jeff Tedford got there.
Yeah, fair enough.
So him bringing them from, I think, 4 wins to 10 wins in 1 year, it tells me he's a good coach.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about being at home, night game, first kind of night game of the year. I'll go with the Gophers. Give them a two, or it's technically the second night game, but I'll give it to the Gophers 2-0. This one just doesn't feel good for some particular reason.
Because Fresno State's a good college
football right.
team.
I know, but I want to convince myself that they can go 3-0 into Maryland. That's what because confidence in college football plays such dividends down the line, right? I'll go 2-0. It's going to be a tight one, though.
All right. So then we get to September 15th. I believe it's a 2:30 game against the MAC opponent, Miami of Ohio. I have this as the easiest of Minnesota's 12 games this fall. Miami Ohio is not a terrible MAC team. They return a lot. They are very upperclassmen heavy defense, and they have some playmakers on offense. The issue I have Minnesota winning this game, but listen to this stat that I found out. Why Miami of Ohio hasn't taken the next step in the MAC is because they are literally atrocious in one-score games. Last year, they were 0-5 in one-score games. And overall, their head coach, Chuck Martin, at Miami of Ohio, is 5-17 in 4 years in one possession games. To me, that just says you're a bad coach if you're losing that many one possession games. So
that
this game is close.
I was going to say, that or your luck is really low. Did you look at their Football Study Hall luck?
I did. And again, and Bill Conley, the one who writes all these Football Study Hall articles, is agreeing with me in the premise that, is it like they are on the bad side of luck?
Right.
Or is it like, hey, like you're not a great coach?
Sure.
So I have Minnesota beating Miami of Ohio 3-0 in the non-conference. What say you?
Well, I know that they're – yeah, I don't see the Gophers losing this game. Your record wasn't great. There's going to be a talent disparity. As long as the Gophers are still healthy, I just don't see how they lose this game. Then again, if they do find a way to lose, crazier things have happened. Like, there was the South Dakota loss. Crazier things have absolutely happened.
All right, so let's get to the first Big Ten game, because I want your thoughts on it, because I literally don't know what to think. September 22nd, Minnesota heads to Maryland.
Yeah.
And for those of you who have your heads in the sand, haven't been following college football, Maryland is just a terrible place to be right now.
Well, okay.
Their head coach is on administrative leave. A player died in the summer. I believe it was either the summer or the spring because of, he died. I believe it was heat stroke.
It basically came down that they didn't give him enough water breaks, right? Like, that's more or less what it came down to.
Like, and for some reason, it all resurfaced again in August here, where this head strength and conditioning coach was fired. DJ Durkin, their head coach, is on administrative leave. Like, I don't know what to think about this Maryland team. Like, how are they going to be playing? Are they, who is the head coach? Who's the football coach?
Well, not only
that. Is it going to be DJ Durkin or interim head football coach Matt Canada?
Yeah. Well, let's not forget that. This is a Maryland team that the Gophers, correct me if I'm wrong, lost to last year at home, right? Basically, correct. Maryland ran all over them.
With QB3.
Right, exactly.
As their quarterback.
With QB3. And then, but go back 2 years ago, the Gophers did the exact same thing to them and ran all over them in...
With QB3.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So it's
interesting, man, because... For those of you who don't know Maryland last year, like, Maryland lost their top two quarterbacks in the first 3 weeks. They lost their best defensive player in the first 3 weeks. All three of those guys are back now. You look at Maryland's schedule prior to Minnesota. They have a Texas team at home. They have a good Temple team at home. Like, I just don't know what to expect. And like you said, Maryland beat Minnesota last year. And this will be the first test because – Maryland has some very good skill position players that gave Minnesota a ton of fits last year. So here's the first test for Rob Smith. Is your defense able to stop the run on the road? Again, this is also Zach Anixed's first road game and a bunch of other young players' first
right.
road game. So as of today, I have this as a loss for Minnesota. They're 3-1.
So I had it as a loss. I was really debating whether or not it was going to be Fresno State or this game. I don't see them coming out of the four games undefeated, right? So I picked this one. I kind of want to revert and go back, just based on the discussion, go back and say, okay, they're going to actually lose the Fresno State game and win this game. I think both of those games are toss ups. So regardless, I had them 3-1 in this first four game stretch. But man, the Maryland is such a funny story, and who knows what twists and turns it's going to take between now and then.
That's what I mean. Like it is a month away as we sit here, August 21st, the game's on September 22nd. Like I have no idea what this Maryland team is going to look like. And again, it's Minnesota's first road game. Zach Anakstad's first road game. So after that, Minnesota goes on a bye week, that final week of September. And then they host the Iowa Hawkeyes at home. It has been tough sledding for Minnesota in recent years. They've lost 5 of their last 6 games against the Hawkeyes. Luckily for Minnesota, they get Iowa at home this year off a bye. But unluckily for Minnesota, in that same break, in that same breath, Iowa will also be coming off a bye. So, again, you look at who does the bye benefit. I mean, I guess neither team because they're both coming off a bye. So the Hawkeyes have four straight home games to start the year. But they do have tough tests early in Iowa State and Wisconsin. So their first road game, I expect the Iowa game to be, as the kids say, popping. I think the crowd is going to be way into this. Again, every time it seems like Iowa's projected to be good, which they are this year, Kirk Ferentz it seems like this is the year that Iowa message boards are going to be calling for Kirk Ferentz to be fired. But again, I don't think Minnesota wins this game. I just think that Nate Stanley and Noah Fant, quarterback and tight end combination, are going to be lethal in the play action game because I'm still not convinced Minnesota can stop the run. So if Minnesota can't stop the run, I have Iowa, and that's what I'm going to say as of right now.
Yeah, you know, this is actually homecoming as well. You know, you try to think that maybe with homecoming the Gophers could have a little extra juice. I'm with you on the running piece. The other thing is I think Nate Stanley's real good. And I think he's going to be one of the
Menominee's own.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
We never got an offer, Tracy Clays. Right. And I'm still bitter about it.
Right. But I think he's really good. I think he's, you know, borderline, you know, top third quarterbacks in the Big Ten, likely maybe after the season. I'm giving the nod to Iowa, even though it's homecoming. Boy, but wouldn't it be fun to win? This would be a real fun one because it would bring
again,
in some
I think
big
this
momentum.
Is a I think this is going to be a close game.
See, I don't know if it's going to be close, but I'd like them to win it. I can't convince myself that there is going to be a close game.
We'll get into it at the end because, again, right. I think we'll end on a note. So after Iowa, Minnesota. By the way, did you hear how hard Minnesota accent I hit that one with
no.
Minnesota? Oh, boy. Me and the Norton buys up there in Bidette. Anyways.
Golly.
Yikes.
Okay, so Ohio State.
Ohio State on the road. So I know, no chance in hell you know this. How many times has Minnesota won in Columbus since 1949?
Since 1949. I know Glenn Mason won there once. I'm going to say 3.
Counting that Glenn Mason win, Minnesota has won twice in Columbus since 1949. Oh. That is 2 wins in 69 years in the horseshoe.
Yeah, I don't have a win here.
No, they ain't win this game.
I mean, regardless of the Urban Meyer, Zach Smith situation.
Yeah, regardless of what's going on there, like this is going to be midseason for Ohio State. They have aspirations of a national football playoff, and they have far too much talent. And Minnesota is far too young for me to project. They're going to head into the horseshoe, and Zach Anakstad's going to beat Urban Meyer. Like that ain't happening. So. Mm-hmm. We have Minnesota on a 3-game losing streak, B-boy.
Yeah, and that's now we both have them at 4-3.
We have Minnesota at 3-3 heading into Nebraska.
Okay, so you'll say, no, actually, you're ahead of yourself. It's only 3-3.
No, I actually think you're ahead of yourself. Minnesota would be 3-3 off the Ohio State.
Okay, so 3-3 going into Nebraska. Okay.
And so after that, Minnesota heads on the road to the Fighting Scott Frost of Nebraska. This is another game. I don't know if you can hear me just running my hand through my hair. I don't know what to think because Nebraska was awful. This is a Minnesota offense and a Minnesota team that lit up the 2017 Nebraska Huskers for like 40 plus points, beat them down at TCF Bank Stadium. And this was a bad offense, and it was an okay defense. Now we're on the road at Nebraska. Scott Frost, year one. I don't really know what to think because Nebraska was so bad last year. They were a 4-win team, Minnesota not great, a 5-win team. But the question is going to be, yes, Nebraska is at home, but you know, Scott Frost in year one, PJ Fleck in year two, which team is going to be more improved by that? I mean, Nebraska gets Minnesota at home this year, so that's the advantage Huskers. But the prior 2 weeks for Nebraska heading into this game, they're away games at Wisconsin and at Northwestern. So while Minnesota, you know, we have Minnesota on a 3-game losing streak coming into Nebraska, I think Nebraska's going to be reeling too because they're going to be losing to the Badgers and to the Wildcats. So I think this is a toss-up game. I expect it to be very competitive until the end, but I'm going to pick the home team in Nebraska. So I have Minnesota 3-4, 4-game losing streak. Where are you at?
So, you know, I was thinking about this, and, you know, confidence is such a huge thing in college football. You know, looking at Nebraska coming in, I kind of see they probably have 2 losses leading into this game. They might be down. Then again, if they do find a way to, you know, come out of that stretch 1-1, you know, they still might be pretty high. Who knows what they've done, at, you know, in Scott Frost's first season. They've got a massive fan base that, you know, could be on cloud nine, you know, projecting national championship in 2 years for all we know, right? But I don't know. At this point, you're right. Nebraska was so bad. I don't know if that was last year. I don't know if that was a function of, you know, their AD had already given up on head coach Riley. It was Riley. I can't remember his first
name. Mike Riley.
The AD had already given up on the head coach at that point when the Gophers played him. So, you know, they may have more talent than I'm giving them credit for. I'm going to give the Gophers a narrow victory here.
Wow. On look yeah. at you, maroon and gold color Kool-Aid drinker.
I know.
So Luke's 4-3. I'm 3-4 heading into an Indiana game at home.
On a Friday night of all things, right?
The Friday night home game because I believe it's NBA weekend.
Okay.
So Minnesota's at home. They're going to be favored barring some miraculous thing from Indiana that I don't see. Yeah. For those of you who don't know much about Indiana football, think essentially 6 wins plus or minus 1 or 2 wins essentially for the last forever. You know, they're in the Big Ten East. They're not in that upper tier with Michigan, Michigan State, big, you know, Penn State, Ohio State. So Minnesota, you know, is kind of in that grind part of their schedule. You know, I have them losing 4 straight, coming off back-to-back road games, and they have a road game after this at Illinois. So Minnesota's kind of in that grind part of the schedule. It's late October. Well, Indiana, what's Indiana look like coming in? Well, they're going to be coming off 3 games against Ohio State on the road, and then Iowa and Penn State at home. I'm not projecting them to win any of those 3. So you're probably looking at an Indiana team at least coming in on a 3-game losing streak on the road. Minnesota gets to come back home, hopefully get right. I think Minnesota beats Indiana, so I have the Gophers at 4-4. What say you?
Yeah, I got a win here for the Gophers over Indiana. I don't know. I just don't see it happening.
So you're 5-3.
Yeah, I got 5-3. You're 4-4.
Yep. So that leaves us going into the first week of November against the Fighting Lovie Smiths of Illinois. I'm not particularly high on Lovie Smith's team in 2018. I have them the lowest of all the Big Ten teams. I mean, I think they're in a tier by themselves with how bad they are. You know, there's not a lot of talent in Champaign, and the talent that is there is very young. And this home game for Illinois is in that kind of the same stretch that Minnesota was in the previous week, where Minnesota has a stretch where they play 3 or 4 mm-hmm. road games and they have 1 lone home game. Well, this is that same stretch for Illinois. In the 2 games previously, they're going to be on the road at Madison, on the road at Maryland, and then they have an away game at Nebraska. So I don't think Illinois is that good. I have Minnesota winning. I have Minnesota 5-4.
Yeah, I don't see the Fighting Lovie Smiths winning this game either. I've got the Gophers winning here. So I got them bowl eligible on November 3rd, 6-3.
We start making your bowl game plans then if you want to listen to Luke. So, and then Minnesota kind of comes into the Purdue game. The November the 10th, final 3 games of the year, 2 of the 3 are at home. I'm not entirely sure what to think of Jeff Brohm's team. I say that because Minnesota gets Purdue at home last year, Minnesota gets Purdue at home this year. They should have beat Purdue on the road last year. And Purdue lost a lot on defense last year. If from last year to this year. And the games for Purdue coming into this Minnesota game are going to be another grind. The three games preceding the Minnesota home game are going to be Purdue is at home against Ohio State, where they're going to be bludgeoned. They're on the road at Michigan State, where they're going to be bludgeoned. And they are home against Iowa, where I think that's going to be a tough game for both teams. And so, again, they could be coming in on a three-game losing streak, where Minnesota could have just won back-to-back games. You get them at home. You have some momentum going. Now, I want this out there that I respect the hell out of Jeff Brohm. I don't think Jeff Brohm is coaching at Purdue next year, because I think some team in the SEC or the Pac-12, or we'll see what happens with Chip Kelly at Notre Dame, ends up paying a ton of money to go get Jeff Brohm.
Sure.
So I have Minnesota winning this game, bowl eligible on November the 10th. And I also have Minnesota on a three-game winning streak. So what do you think?
Yeah, I actually have the Gophers losing this game for the reasons that you actually cited. I have massive respect for Jeff Brohm. I am still, like, kind of reeling from that loss last year where they found a way to squeak it out over the Gophers. I just think that, you know, a second year in this system, you know, the success that they saw last year, I think they're going to build on top of that. I think they're going to be a lot better. And I think that this is a loss for the Gophers.
Interesting. Another place where we differ. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So you have them, what do you have? Six and four. So we're 6-4, but different 6-4.
Yeah.
Okay. So that leaves us with the Northwestern Wildcats, arguably the hottest team in 2017. They reeled off 8 straight wins. They were a team that I think is going to be a very tough game for Minnesota. This is a Northwestern team that, as I said, 8 straight wins to end 2017. They return a senior quarterback in Clayton Thorson. The question is going to be with Northwestern is, I think defensively they're going to be very stout. Obviously, Minnesota didn't score a point against them last year in the same game. They don't have Justin Jackson anymore. What does that running back rotation look like? I just can't predict kind of a Minnesota win here. But I will say, here are the things that are working for Minnesota. It is going to be senior day. It is going to be mid-November. The fans are going to be ready to come out to honor these seniors. Minnesota is going to be riding a lot of momentum, so I think there's going to be a lot of people there. 3-game winning streak heading into senior day. And so I think the fans come out hot. I think the team comes out hot. That being said, I keep talking about these stretches for these Big Ten teams before Minnesota. Well, here's the brutal stretch that Northwestern's going to be coming off of. Okay, just for frame of reference here, Minnesota's last 3 games before Northwestern: Indiana, Illinois, and Purdue. 3 games I think they should win. Northwestern's 3-game stretch coming into Minnesota: home against Wisconsin, home against Notre Dame, on the road at Iowa. I mean, where are they at physically? Where are they at mentally? Because sure, there is a very real possibility they could lose all 3 of those games. So I think it's a tough game for Minnesota. I just, knowing the beatdown that Northwestern was able to put on Minnesota's defense last year, I need to see it with my own 2 eyes that this defense can stop the run. And until I can say that, I'm going to predict Northwestern victory. Minnesota's win streak ends at 3. The Gophers are 6-5.
Yeah, I don't have the Gophers winning this game either. I don't know how many times. I forget what year it was, but I somehow talked you into you know, a loss for the Gophers against Northwestern. They just don't have a ton of success against Pat Fitzgerald. I know that they won, 2 years ago where Richardson had a phenomenal game, but they've just historically not had a ton of success against Fitzgerald. I just think he kind of has their number, you know, until proven otherwise, and until, you know, basically they can find a way to get around that defense. I just don't see them winning close games against Northwestern.
So that leaves us with Madison.
Yep. And I do not have the Gophers winning that game.
Neither do I. Minnesota hasn't beat Wisconsin since 2003. Haven't won in Madison since 1994. That was 24 years ago. And Minnesota hasn't won in 14 years against Madison. I have Wisconsin, and it just tastes just so awful coming out of my mouth. I have Wisconsin as the top team in the Big Ten right now.
Here's a question, though. What is the situation? Didn't they just lose a wide receiver, though?
They lost one of their starting receivers. He was charged with, I think, a couple of counts of sexual either misconduct or assault.
Well, regardless, none of it's good.
Yeah, and their other receiver is involved in it as well. So it's a weird situation for them. But again, Wisconsin, we're talking about Wisconsin receivers. Wisconsin is one of the best offensive lines in the country. They have, again, Jonathan Taylor, who's up there for the Heisman. And it's just Minnesota has started out so well against Madison the last two times in Madison, and they just haven't been able to close the deal. Again, I can't see Minnesota beating Wisconsin. Is there? I mean, this could be, again, if Wisconsin could be potentially undefeated right here. And so, well, how it would taste oh so sweet to beat Wisconsin, get the axe for the first time since 2003, the first win since 1994 in Madison, and dash the college football hopes of everyone in that awful state to the east of us. I just don't see it happening. I got Minnesota 6-6.
I don't see it happening either. I'm just curious though. Like, does Wisconsin have a pretty good schedule? Like, or are they really? Or do you really just think they're that good?
I think they're that good for the system that they have.
Okay.
So as we kind of wrap up here, Luke and I both have the team at 6-6 right now, 9 days before they play their first game. And you look at basically the only two games that Luke and I agree that there's basically no shot is Wisconsin, on the road at Wisconsin, on the road at Ohio State. There, I mean, there's plausible ways. I mean, I think Minnesota has a greater than 30% chance to beat, you know, Maryland, Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern. I just really don't know. I just don't know what this team's going to look like, because we know what they looked like in close games last year, and they just couldn't finish the deal. But, I mean, again, there is a plausible way where you can get to that 7-8 win mark.
Yeah.
But there's just so many things to where that need to go right for Minnesota with the amount of youth that they have on offense, at quarterback, receiver, tight end, offensive line, and in the secondary, so many things need to go right. So many things need to stay healthy. But I do think, as I stand here today after watching six practices on this fall camp, expectation should be a bowl game. I will be very disappointed that if the majority of this roster, their key pieces stay healthy and Minnesota's not at six wins, that's a very much a disappointment to me, because they have the talent to absolutely get to a bowl game this year. And especially as we look to 19 and 20, I mean, the ceiling is going to be 8+ wins very likely in the next 2 years. So, but you know what I mean, Luke? You look at those four toss-up games that, you know, as I mentioned, the on the road at Maryland, at home against Iowa, at home against Northwestern, on the road at Nebraska. You know, I have Minnesota 5-2 at home, 1-4 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just youth and inexperience don't win on the road in the Big Ten, and it usually shows up at home.
Right.
But again, there just are. I mean, do you agree? I mean, there's plausible ways. I mean, do you think there's a greater than 30% chance of the other 10 games outside of Ohio State and Wisconsin that Minnesota should win?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the Iowa game is the one that, you know, there's maybe a chance that there's less than a 30% chance they win that game. But to your point earlier, you know, when Iowa has high expectations, they usually seem to not meet or exceed them. So,
and again, it's at home.
Yeah.
And again, Minnesota gets them at home. It's just there's so many different things that have to play out yet.
Yeah.
Whereas kind of Iowa's more established. You know, Maryland gets the benefit of having Minnesota at home. Nebraska gets the benefit of having Minnesota at home. And then we'll see who shows up in likely a cold November senior day at Minnesota. So,
you know, I actually heard through the grapevine, there's a listener that that is, I believe, a psychologist that said, you know, past behavior predicts future behavior. And, you know, he has said, again, I heard this secondhand, but he has said, you know, with PJ Fleck's success at Western Michigan, it wouldn't surprise him that he'd see the same success, you know, in year two here at Minnesota. I think the schedule is somewhat favorable that's possible, but, you know, me being an engineer, I have a really hard time convincing myself, you know, without the proof that this is possible. So I'll be curious to see if you know, psychology or engineering and statistics you know, wins out here. But, you know, it's true, you know, past behavior has predicted future behavior many times over.
And that's again, we need to see the proof. I mean we've told you our reasons why we're skeptical, but again, we're still predicting a bowl game. So again, it's going to be interesting to see how things kind of play out here.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the floor of expectation should be 6 wins, right, in a bowl game. If not,
barring huge injuries to guys like
always,
like Roddy, like if Roddy Smith goes down, this is a completely different offense,
right?
Unless someone can show something.
I mean, injuries are always a thing that you have to deal with, and part of it is they don't have a ton of depth, right? They're still trying. They're trying to build that. You know, they had a, you know, there was what season? What 2015? Where you know, Kill and Co. Or maybe 2014 or 2015? Kill and Co. had some depth, and they actually, you know, they were able to string off 8 wins. Now Fleck is trying to build that back up because let's be honest, last year the cupboard wasn't full. Right.
No, there wasn't a gold mine unbeknownst to some other former Golden Gopher football coaches.
Right. There really wasn't. So this season will be interesting. I think the schedule plays out that they should have an opportunity. That would actually help maybe propel them, you know, in recruiting, etc., to build for the, you know, the next couple seasons where, you know, they really could start making some waves.
How exciting is it? I mean, we've gone an hour plus now about talking about actual legitimate Gopher football.
It's kind of fun. I mean, it'll be fun to have, you know, things to talk in week in, week out. I mean, that I'm looking forward to. And there's some very interesting storylines to follow. You've kind of built up the Rodney Smith one. Obviously the national media will go after the redshirt freshman one.
The true freshman walk on angle. Mayfield, which is again, the most unfair thing in the world.
But. Well, yeah. But then you know, PJ Fleck is his own walking storyline, right? He's constantly building storylines, whether it be giving out scholarships or, you know, whatever it might be. There's always storylines with him. So I think that it's going to be just nice to have that, you know, week in, week out.
Yeah, next podcast, we're previewing New Mexico State.
Yeah.
And we got some exciting things coming up next week on the podcast. We'll be able to talk more about it then. But exciting times are around. Real legitimate football is less than double-digit days away.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Again, if you enjoy the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you rate and leave a comment about that on any podcast aggregator, you know, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. That's much appreciated. Looking forward to previewing New Mexico State, and go Gophers.